antidote to tyranny is knowledge. And acting with courage to defend our most basic rights, life, liberty, and property. Dedicated to the cause of freedom for everyone. Here's Peter Mack.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in to the Peter Mack Show on this December 19th, 2009. My second to the last show. I've decided to end this show at the end of the year because I just can't afford to maintain it. And I know many of you out there are hard-pressed financially, too, because of the economic crisis. But nonetheless, I will do my best to bring you two last good shows. And tonight, my special guest is Larkin Rose. And he, of course, was the first guest I had on when I reincarnated the show back in late June of this year. And then he's been on a couple other times. In fact, he did a really good show for me on October 31st. And if you haven't heard that show, I encourage you to go back and download it and listen to it for free. You can find all the shows on my website, PeterMackShow.com, or on Liberty News Radio's website, LibertyNews.com. So take a listen to some of those shows. And if you have any feedback for me or any questions, you can always send me an email at Peter@PeterMackShow.com. So Larkin, thanks again for being willing to be on tonight on fairly short notice. You've got a lot of stuff going on in your life and probably working on another book or two, I imagine. Let me just recount some of the books you've written. Kicking the Dragon was about your ordeal with the IRS, right? And you wrote that mostly in prison, if I'm correct? And How to Be a Successful Tyrant. And then your latest, which is a novel, is called The Iron Web. And I highly encourage everybody to read each of those three, but in particular the last one. It's a really gripping story, and you can get a copy of that book for, what, like $15 or something, Larkin?
Yep, and now we have the audio book, too, of me reading the whole thing unabridged for $14.
Okay, good. And that's 14 or 15 plus shipping or whatever?
That includes shipping. $14 for the audio book, $15 for printed.
$14 for the audio, $15 for the printed. And they can order those by going to LarkinRose.com. And you accept payment via PayPal, I believe, there.
Yeah,
right?
PayPal, credit card, mail, whatever.
Oh, credit cards, too. Okay, so again, take a look at LarkinRose.com, particularly if you haven't been there before, and look at some of the testimonials about the book The Iron Web, as well as the others. If you're, of course, interested in the tax issue, the one to get is Kicking the Dragon. And if you're just interested in general freedom issues, like we're going to talk about tonight, then the latter two are the ones to get, How to Be a Successful Tyrant and The Iron Web. And excellent books. I've read all three, as you might imagine. But one of the things that I started thinking about well after Larkin did was this whole idea about government and, you know, whether we should have government, because I was a staunch constitutionalist for my whole time on the previous version of my show, I think, Larkin, when you started with me way back in 2001, if you can think of that, at the beginning of the decade. It was in November of 2001.
Yep.
And you've
like
been
about
helpful.
And years ago.
It seems like it. Your life is you've had a number of experiences in that 8-year period.
Yeah, not all good.
And,
educational.
Not all good, but educational. To be sure, which is what we try to do on this show. We try to educate people about things. So, and I think before me, you were a person, I think you told me you were a conservative and you believed in the Constitution and limited government and that sort of thing, right?
Yep. That's how I was raised and what I believed and argued vehemently in favor of it.
Now have friends that we you know, like and share good times with, and they fall into that camp. And when we start talking about some of the ideas that we'll discuss tonight on this show, some of those folks, I think they're, if not literally, metaphorically, their eyes roll back in the back of their heads as they listen to us talk about the ultimate limit of government, which is zero government. And that just makes some people have their heads spin or whatever, because they can't fathom that.
Right. And so, to be fair, I couldn't for years and years. In fact, everybody I know, I think including you, was trained to believe, well, that's not an option. You can't have none. The question is, what kind of master will we all have? And to even contemplate, let's not have one at all. It's just, no, that's death and destruction and mayhem, and we can't even think about that. And that's how I was, and that's how most people are still.
Right. So if you can recount for us as best you can, what brought you to your current position?
Well, I was basically slowly dragged into it by, I mean, you know lots about math. And if you had a math problem that seemed to, like, contradict itself, there was a problem in there that it just didn't add up, I'm guessing it would probably bug you, and you'd want to work at it until it made sense. Well, philosophy was that way for me, is I, you know, advocated limited government and the Constitution and all that, but there were these little pieces that didn't make sense, that I couldn't all the way justify, that didn't even match other pieces of my philosophy. It was this sort of self-contradictory paradox, a few of them sitting in my beliefs, and I don't like that, because if you believe two conflicting things, you can't be right. You can't be right about both of them. So,
right.
You know, whatever the field of thought you're talking about, whether it's, you know, science or health or philosophy or anything else, if you have two beliefs that don't match, one of them has to be wrong. And I wanted to know which one. And so I was always in the mode of, I want to go back and look at what I believe and narrow it down and make it more and more concise and specific until I really get it. Because I don't like having these blurs that I know, like, something's in there that doesn't make sense. I'm not willing to just sort of look the other way and go, oh, well, that's okay.
Right.
It bugged me. And I know a lot of people who are like that. I think you're one of them, that it bugs you if there's something
right.
that doesn't add up. And you aim your brain at it until you make it add up.
Right. Well, let's maybe do a little role play here. Let me be conservative Larkin Rose as best I can, and you be current Larkin Rose, and let's just talk our way through this. I'm a person who believes in freedom. I want people to be free. I want people to enjoy the fruits of their labor. I want people to be able to live their lives however they want. But I realize that there's a potential for other people interfering with that. There are potential enemies overseas that could attack me. There are people in the United States that could rob me or defraud me. There are people that could sell me drugs that might not be safe or thoroughly tested. And so I want somebody looking out for me. I don't want those things to have happen to me. So what's wrong with having a very limited government, you know, that is confined to just doing exactly those kinds of things?
Okay, we have this protector organization, we'll call it, that you call government, you, the old me, call government. I want to ask a few questions about it, the nature of that thing that you want protecting you.
Okay.
Does it have the right to force you to fund something you don't want to fund?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, let me just think out loud here for a minute and think. Certainly, it has to be funded if it's going to provide protection, you know, against a robber down the street or some powerful enemy overseas. Then obviously, it's going to have the tools and the manpower to do that. So I certainly agree that it's going to have to be funded in some way. If all of us agree that it should be funded in some way, then what's wrong with that? What's wrong with all of us just saying, well, we have to fund it in some way. We want to keep it as small as possible.
Right. Well, that's why the question is, let's say the group says, we also want it to take care of the poor. And you say, I don't really think it would be good at that. I think it would be inefficient. Does it, this protector thing, have the right to say, well, we don't really care what you think. The majority has decided we're taking your money from you, whether you like it or not, for what the other people want it to do. Does it have the right to do that?
Does it have the right to take money from me without me giving it permission, is what you're asking?
Right, to pay for things you don't want, you don't think it should do.
Well, I guess ideally not, but I don't see how we could have such a government if it didn't have some funding. If all of us just said, we don't want to fund it, but we certainly want it to be there, then we're being a little bit hypocritical, aren't we? Or what am I missing?
Right. And I was about to get to the second question about this thing, so we'll do that after the
Okay. break. Hold your second question. And folks, hold your questions or thoughts. We'll give you a chance to chime in or two. We'll be back here in just a couple minutes. Stay with us. You're listening to the Peter Mac Show on Liberty News Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, my special guest, Larkin Rose, with me tonight here on Liberty News Radio, and we're trying to figure out, or I'm trying to figure out, why it's wrong to have limited government. If we're not going to have limited government, then we're going to have something like no government or anarchy, or we're going to have unlimited government, really big government, which seems to be the direction we're heading. And I, being pre-1998 or something like that, Larkin Rose, and trying to understand why current Larkin Rose believes the way he does. I want limited government. I want it to protect me from bad things like bad drugs, bad food, bad people, bad air, but I don't want it to interfere with my freedoms to make a living any way I want to, as long as I don't hurt other people. And I'm trying to figure out why that's not a good thing, or just what's wrong with my philosophy. So I think you were about to ask me a second question or something, Larkin?
Right, right. And I really went through, I didn't do it out loud, that would be a little schizophrenic, but I went through all this, like these are questions I asked myself. So my second question to you, or the old me, or whatever, is this protector organization, does it have to be a monolithic monopoly? And what I mean by that is, if you and a bunch of guys say, we really want to be protected from scary, nasty people, whether it's scary, nasty people overseas or scary, nasty people down the street. So you all say, we want to be protected. And so you find a group and say, we want these guys to protect us, and we're willing to pay for it. But I'm across the street, me and a bunch of other guys say, we want to be protected too, because everybody, even bad guys, want to be protected from other bad guys. So we want to be protected too, but we don't really like the guys you want to do it. We think we have somebody who will be cheaper and do a better job. They're better equipped. We think they're smarter and they're, for a bunch of reasons, we think they're better. Is that allowable under your system, or does there have to be one enforced monopoly doing this for the whole town or country or planet or universe?
Well, do you mean, can you hire a private police force? Is that what you mean?
I mean, can I decide not to pay for yours and pay for a different one instead?
Well, I suppose if you live in like in a different jurisdiction, like you live in Pennsylvania, so you pay for the state police in Pennsylvania, and I pay in part for the state police in Missouri. So,
well, this is just me living across the street. Like, we're in the same town.
Oh, I see.
I just want to hire different people to do it. Do I have to pay for yours?
Well, everybody paid for their own, wouldn't that just create chaos with all these different protection organizations running around and not really sure who's protecting whom?
Sort of in the way that there's chaos in the food production industry, where people can go to whatever grocery store they want, and nobody's forcing them to do it all. And that's why the question is, whatever you predict about it, is it okay to make me pay for the protectors you want, instead of letting me say, well, I want protection too, but I think these guys over here will do a better job, so you pay for yours and I'll pay for mine. Is that allowable under your system?
Well, I guess so, but what do you mean? Maybe you need to flesh out for me what you mean, make you pay. I mean, I'm not going to personally stick a gun in your face and force you to pay for my police, but if we all live in the same area and the majority of us vote for this police force that you benefit from, shouldn't you be compelled to pay for it too?
Well, that's the question, and I'd say no. Just like if 70% of the people in a town really like one supermarket, they have no right to tell the other 30%, and you have to go there too. The other 30% can go somewhere else or grow their own food or whatever. So it always comes down to a question of what is this protector entity allowed to do? Can it say, on behalf of the majority, we've decided for you who you're going to pay and what you're going to pay for and how much you're going to pay for it? Are they allowed to do that? And if so, what happened to them being a protector? Because they're not anymore. Then they're the thief.
Okay, now let me see if I understand this. So if I understand you right, what you're contending then is that if I, in this small locale, am part of the majority, and we all voted for and pay for this police force, and you don't want to be a part of it, you are contending that my protector police force, or me, is not only not a protector, we are actually threatening you or harming you if you want to have your own police force and we don't allow it. Is that right?
Right. If you don't let me go hire somebody different to do that job, then you become or not you personally, but your quote-unquote protector group becomes the attacker. They become the aggressor because they say, we're making you pay for our services, which is exactly what a mafia protection racket is. We protect you, meaning we don't hurt you, if you give us a bunch of money.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this. So what you're contending is that if you don't want to be protected by or pay for the protection service that the majority of us choose, then you ought to be allowed to just go find your own protector service in exactly the same way. If you don't want to go to the grocery store that 70% of the people happen to use, then you should be able to go to a different grocery store. Okay?
Right.
Let me ask you this, Lark. Okay. Is going to a okay, I'm just thinking out loud now. Are there any meaningful differences between the unit or the entity that provides like police protection and a grocery store? What if there are police entities that, that are competing with one another about who's right and wrong? Like the grocery stores don't like steal customers from one another. I mean, they try to get one another's customers by offering cheaper prices or better quality or some other kind of convenience. But I guess I'm just wondering out loud if that would work with police or protection.
Right. But the step before what would work is, what is this protector thing that you're describing? In other words, you might say, like a lot of people say, in fact, this is basically the excuse that all statists fall back on, we have to do it this way or there would be chaos. And they usually say that because somebody pointed out to them how the system they're advocating is not protection, it's extortion. And the only argument they have left is, well, we have to have it that way or there would be chaos and destruction and mayhem and crime everywhere and shootouts in the streets. But that's why I put it in the form of question is, does this protector group, first of all, does it have the right to force me to pay for it when I don't want to? And sort of a different side of the same question is there some reason there has to be one gigantic thing? Like, nobody thinks that about food production, that we need one humongous food company feeding us all, and nobody else is allowed to do it, and everyone has to pay that company. Nobody thinks that. Nobody has any reason to think that. So why do they think that about protection? That why assume that the thing has to be a big, monolithic, enforced monopoly, that there's not allowed to be competition? You can't say, well, I like these protectors over here better than your protectors.
Okay. I mean, I think you make a good point, but What happens if there's a dispute about who's actually protecting whom? What if you're engaged in criminal activity and your protection outfit, your police, quote unquote, protect you from, you know, being arrested or protect you so that you can continue being a criminal? I know we're up against the hour here, so think about that when we come back. All right, back with Larkin's response to that question in a few minutes. You're listening to Liberty News Radio, and I'm Peter Mack. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, and I think I was just putting a question to Larkin that what happens if your protection company, police, private police, what have you, inadvertently, or, you know, what happens if they protect you? You become a criminal and they protect you from being arrested or from, you know, protect you as you go about your criminal activity.
Right. What basically, happens? What if they used force for something bad? Either I stole and they protected me, or they went out and stole, or they did, you know, if you have competing protection companies, and state is asked this all the time, what if there's a conflict and somebody decides, well, I'm going to hire my company to go rob you? And state just predict that's going to happen all over the place. Here's the funny thing about the question. I would respond with the question, well, do you advocate that? And what I mean by that is the supposed solution advocated by statists is the exact problem that they say, watch out for that. Namely, if there are competing forces, one might go bad and start robbing people. And therefore, my force is going to forcibly take your money to pay for it. In other words, we're going to rob you, because if we don't, somebody might rob you. And so the question becomes, well, you know, I don't like it when people get robbed. I'm not going to support an organization that goes around robbing people. Are you? Do you advocate that I be robbed to pay for your group? Because I don't. I don't advocate that anybody be robbed.
Okay, right. Okay, so I think I see it. So in bringing up the question of my concern that your private police for, let's say, your 30% of the people, in it, you know, falls into criminal activity either by protecting you or promoting that criminal activity itself, what you're pointing out is that if I declare there to be only one police force who gets its money by force, that they're already doing what I am concerned about your private police force possibly doing.
Right, right. They're doing the same thing. And that's why I put it on a personal level and say, if my quote-unquote defensive force started robbing people, it wouldn't be mine anymore. I'd stop paying for it. I'd resist it. So my question to statists is, would you? Or are you advocating that I be robbed for fear of me advocating that you be robbed? Which is a really weird response, but that's what it boils down to, is people say everyone has to be forced to pay for the protection thing I want, because if not, somebody might force me to hand over my money to them. In other words, I'm going to rob you before you rob me. That's the basis of statism. And it's not a very good way for civilization to be.
No, I think I see your point. So just to reiterate one more time, because if I'm sitting there saying there should only be one police force, then that's the one, say, voted on by the majority, and if it collects money from people through force extraction, which is what tax is, I admit, I don't like it, that's why I want a small government, then I am preemptively promoting or at least allowing to have happen what I am concerned about you potentially doing.
Right, right. Okay. And it really just comes down to, I'm going to rob you first so you don't rob me, or I'm going to have my quote-unquote protection organization rob you because I'm scared you might rob me. And that's why I like to do it on an individual basis and say, well, do you advocate supporting a company that robs your neighbors? Because everybody says no, but most of them are lying. Because when they call it government and they call the robbery taxation, suddenly they think it's okay. So the difference is one of perception, where they say, basically, they're scared of illegal robbery, and their solution is to legalize robbery for their group, as if that makes it good.
Wow.
It's like saying, I'm scared that you might illegally murder me, so I'm going to pass a law that you should be killed. And it was legal. It wasn't murder, because I legalized it first. So I'm killing you because I'm scared you might kill me if I don't. Not because you've done anything or threatened anything, but just because, just human nature in general, I'm kind of worried that you might want to hurt me, so I'm going to pass a law for you to be killed. And it's different in degree, but it's not different in principle than saying, I'm going to pass a law that takes your money from you by force, because I'm scared that you might take my money by force without a law. You might illegally rob me, so I want to legally rob you ahead of time to make sure you don't.
And I certainly don't want to do that, because that would be violating my principles. Well, Larkin, it looks like we do have a caller, believe it or not. So let's go ahead and take him. It looks like we have Al on the line. So if you want to pull Al up, that would be great.
Hi, this is Al M with Freeman Radio. How are
Howdy,
you guys doing?
Hey, Al.
Oh, man, it's wonderful to hear you guys. A great dissertation.
We're having fun.
I have to tell Larkin, though, I absolutely I got my books. I appreciate it. I ordered 10 books for Christmas for friends and relatives of the Iron Web. And I'll tell you what, Larkin, if that should be the Pulitzer Prize winner right there. I was absolutely astounded. It gives hope. And I wanted to tell you, you did a great job writing that book. And I appreciate the bonus, too, Larkin.
Oh, yeah.
But I had a thought. You know, you guys were talking about the monopolistic ways of that the government works, and now it's not just a government. Now it's governments against the people. I had a thought on this carbon taxation thing. They're not telling you what they're going to use the money for. They're just going to charge a tax. They don't have a purpose for it. I mean, they claim to, but now you've got this world body that's going to institute some law that we all have to abide by. And, you know, they're doing it right in front of our nose. What do you guys think about that?
Well, yeah, it's funny that, and I jokingly say, why on earth would you think that the world, you know, whatever you believe about global warming, why do you think that taking your money and giving it to Al Gore will save the planet? Because they're not saying you can't produce CO2. They're just saying when you do, we're going to steal some money from you. Like, how does moving money from here over to there, when we do this supposedly nasty thing, never mind that the whole theory is bunk, how exactly does that help anything? And I'm actually in the middle of writing an article about the silliness that shows up in so many debates. Like, the debate is over global warming, and the one side says, well, there's global warming and we're destroying the earth, so government has to get involved. And the other side says, no, we're not. They've fudged the numbers, and it's not this crisis, so government doesn't need to get involved. But I feel like backing up and saying, wait, you made a flying leap of logic. Let's suppose there is global warming. Why on earth would you think that giving more money and power to government will do any good? Like, why is there this assumption, leap of faith, that, there's a problem, better throw freedom out the window and enslave us all? When in history has that ever solved any problem? But people just miss that, and they just assume that, well, if there really is global warming, we all have to be, you know, robbed blind to give money to Al Gore. Like, how would that fix it? Even if...
Well, just to play the devil's advocate, Larkin, don't they claim that if they have high enough taxes on producing carbon that it will not eliminate it, but it will lessen the amount of carbon? If you tax something, it tends to be less, and if you subsidize something, it tends to be more. So wouldn't they say that?
Right, but they don't even argue that very often. They talk about, well, you have to pay carbon offsets. Like, it's just the tax. Like Al said, they don't say what they're going to do with it. They're just, well, we're going to rob you when you do that. You know, when you do anything we think might be destructive, we're going to rob you a little bit. Well, that'll fix the planet. Like, what you'll do is make us poor, and we're still going to drive around. We still have to drive places, and, you know, we can live in colder houses and stuff. But why do people just assume that the solution, you know, whether there's a crisis or not, if there's a crisis, the solution must be to get rid of freedom and give government lots of power? Like, when have they ever fixed any crisis in the history of the world?
Well, they've had all those wars, Larkin.
Yeah, yeah, and they fixed a whole lot. I guess they fixed overpopulation, maybe.
Oh. Well, you know, I was thinking about the services that are provided, too. You know, look, for example, at your basic water service. You know, my grandfather used to joke that pretty soon they'll be charging for water. And, you know, now, of course, that's true with especially the bottled water, you know, and they're really making money hand over fist. But basically, the idea in the original beginning was to be able to provide a treated water to a large population. Oh, I hear music.
Yeah, if you want to hold on, we can continue after the break, Al.
Be glad to.
Okay, hang with us. Folks, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to the Peter Mac Show on Liberty News Radio. Okay, we're back, ladies and gentlemen, and we have Larkin Rose as my special guest tonight, and Al is on the phone, and they're sort of discussing the issue in general and specifically related to global warming, the carbon tax. So go ahead, Al. I think we cut you off there because of the break.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to make the point that, you know, when they first started doing the residential water, the whole idea was to make it more efficient and so that they could, you know, treat the water, test the water, and protect society. Well, now they claim to own the water. And I understand from I listened to Derry Brownfield as well, and now I understand that they're telling farmers if a river runs through their property, they can't let their cattle or hogs or whatever be close to that water. They have to fence it off and provide water separately.
It just seems like
everything that they touch. Our Creator gave us all these things for life sustainment, and somehow they claim to take ownership. And that was the thing with the carbon tax that I was trying to get at, is they're taking ownership of, kind of in a reverse process, but they're taking ownership of the air.
Right. Our right to breathe.
Yeah.
And that for me is the dead giveaway. Like, if somebody said, oh, well, I look into this, and I think there's global warming, and I think it's man-made, so I wonder what we should do about it, I might believe them. But when they say, so we need more government, I'm immediately suspicious, because what, if you look at the track record, you know, people don't want dirty air and dirty water and the you know, coasts all flooding and all the stuff we're supposed to be scared is going to happen. But the solutions are never... And whether you're talking about drinking water or anything else, the government never says, oh, my gosh, there's a problem. Hey, you people, change what you're doing. They say, change what you're doing or we'll shoot you. We'll throw you in a cage. We'll regulate you. We'll tax you. But, I mean, if you look at the green industry, which I think is mostly based on government lies, but people like to buy stuff that they think is helping the environment. Is it just a multi-gajillion-dollar industry? Because the people like to think, I'm not the one, you know, polluting everything and this and that and the other thing. But those in government never say, we see a problem, so we would suggest that you buy this instead of that. They always say, so we're coming in and we're going to control you. Because, yeah, like you said, they act as if they own the world. And as, you know, as stewards of the planet, we're going to enforce our ideas on everybody else. And golly gee, guess what? Our ideas are always, you get less freedom, we get more power. And if you look at, you know, environmentalism is a good one, because if you look at the biggest polluters, guess what? They're all communist. The Soviet Union, Red China, their environmental records just stink compared to the U.S. Why is that? Because free, rich people, and people become rich by being free because they can build their own wealth and become prosperous, they can start to worry about, let's have our rivers be cleaner and our air be. People who are starving to death say, I don't really care too much about whether there's a little smog in the morning. I kind of want some bread. Yeah. And so in history, the solutions that work are always freedom. But when the government comes out and says there's a crisis, their solution is always less freedom. And it's always, I better give us lots of power because, hey, it worked so well in the Soviet Union, didn't it? And so I'm just immediately suspicious of anybody who immediately jumps to the more government power solution to any crisis, real or made up.
Well, Larkin, let me go back to, again, being the devil's advocate here, something you said earlier, that if somebody doesn't comply with you know, the laws about water or whatever, the government will just shoot you. Well, they don't really do that, do they? Don't they just threaten you with a fine or something? And you know, you might have to pay a fine if you did that, or I suppose if you didn't pay the fine, you might have to go to jail. Why do you say that they would shoot you?
Because for the same reason I refer to carjackers as violent. Most carjackers never shoot anybody. They point a gun at them and they say, "Give me your car," and most people give them their car. The threat is very real. The threat itself is violence. Every law coming out of government is the threat of violence. The vast majority of people go, okay, okay, okay. So they never even get a nasty letter, or they never get a fine, or they never get anything else. But ultimately what comes down to is, you do what we say or we kill you. In between is, we send you a nasty reminder, and then we fine you, which means we take some of your money, and then we prosecute you and throw you in a cage. And if we come to throw you in the cage and you resist, then we kill you. So it's all, every law is backed by the ability and willingness to use deadly force to kill somebody. In the vast majority of cases, it never gets there. They never actually pull out the gun and point it at somebody in the vast majority of cases. But everybody knows it's not a suggestion. It's, we will do nasty things to you if you don't do this. And the closer they get to the nasty thing, the more people buckle under and say, okay, we'll do what you say. But it isn't because it's a nice suggestion. It's because it's backed by, we are going to use whatever amount of violence it takes to make you comply with our commands, because that's what government is.
They use force for everything they do.
Yep.
If you don't mind, I can give an example of that. There's a story that just came out this last week, and you guys might have read about it or heard about it, but a person named Greg Catan.
It doesn't ring a bell.
Greg Catan has a website that he was, it was something to do with anti-cancer drugs, that he was selling some kind of additives or substances that would fight cancer, and so he claimed. But just like everything else, you know, it's come down that if you do a search for baking soda, for example, there's an Italian oncologist who got fired, lost his job, because he was using simple baking soda to treat cancers. And he says cancer is a fungus. Well, I'm not here to debate that. What happened was Greg Catan had served 33 months in prison because he was selling items that were unapproved through the FDA. And so he decided that, you know, the lack of freedom in this country just wasn't worth it. So he packed up after he got out of prison and went to Ecuador. And when he went to Ecuador, he's been there about, I think, about a year. He had settled in. He got his papers, his paperwork. That was his primary residence. He was a resident of Ecuador. Well, he got stopped at a checkpoint for some reason. The judge put him in the cage, as you say, Larkin. And the judge was going to render a decision to basically let him go because he had all his paperwork intact and he was an Ecuadorian citizen. But instead, through the State Department, the hooded thugs came and grabbed him, put him on an American Airlines plane, the judge, the Ecuadorian judge, went to the airport and demanded that they release him from the plane. They claimed that, well, it was an they were on American territory because they were on an American plane, and American rules applied, even though they were on the Ecuadorian tarmac. Mm-hmm. And they basically kidnapped this guy, this Greg Caton, and flew him back to Miami because he continued to sell these drugs that, with the hopes of fixing cancer, curing cancer, or aiding people with cancer. So they kidnapped him from another country.
Right, and there are those, you know, there are those examples. I hadn't heard of that one in particular, where somebody continued to do what they believe in, even when the government said, don't do that, and then the thuggery comes out in the open. Most of the time, the slaves just meekly say, yes, massa, and you don't see the open violence. One of the most ridiculous examples is there's some, you know, Hurricane Katrina hit and annihilated half of Louisiana, and a bunch of people drove down there, a bunch of people who have a hardware store or something, threw a bunch of generators in the truck, drove down there, and sold them at a hefty profit because they had to drive them 1,000 miles or something.
Right.
And apparently there's some state law, I don't think it was federal, I think it was state, about, what's the stupid term they use for price gouging?
Price gouging.
And they prosecuted the guy, even though his customers wanted them. They said, oh, excellent, generators. We don't care that it's twice as much as it normally is. We'll pay for it. The customers were happy. The guy was making a bunch of money. He was happy. And they put him in jail for it. They showed up with guns and dragged him away and stuck him in jail for performing a service to flood victims. And it's one of the rare cases where their open fascist thuggery comes right out in the open. Normally people cower and, okay, I'll do what I'm told. But, and the guy didn't even know about the laws. He was like, what, this is just ridiculous. It's not like I was going down there and pointing a gun at them. I said, here's, you know, they cost a lot because I had to drive a zillion miles and I know there's a big demand. You know, if I sold them at a regular price, they'd all be gone in 2 seconds. So I'm going to make the profit I know I can make. And they put him in a cage for it. Men with guns came, dragged him off, put him in a cage. And that is behind every law. No matter how stupid and irrational or minor the law appears to be, they're always backed by a threat of violence.
Okay, we'll be back for hour number two with Larkin in a few minutes. Al, thanks for calling in, and I'll have some more questions for you in a minute, Larkin. And if others want to call in, you're welcome to do so. Phone number is 866-986-6397. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Stay with us here at Liberty News Radio.
The antidote to tyranny is knowledge, and acting with courage to defend our most basic rights, life, liberty, and property, dedicated to the cause of freedom for everyone. Here's Peter Mack.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Hour 2 of the Peter Mack Show on this December 19th, 2009, second to the last show. Larkin Rose is on the line with me, and I'm sort of playing in the role of Larkin before he decided that the best size of government is zero government, which is where I'm at too. So I'm in this role of saying, well, I believe in limited government, and we're sort of going through this dialogue and trying to figure out, you know, why limited government isn't acceptable. And Larkin was pointing out some really dumb things that government has done, like arresting people that are selling products that they think are too high, even though it's a mutually agreed upon price between somebody who needs the product, in this case a generator, and somebody who's willing to sell it. And I agree, as a proponent of limited government, I agree there are many, many, many things that the government does that are terrible. But and after our discussion the first hour, I see very clearly his points about supporting the police through taxation. But I guess I'm not fully convinced that we should do away with government, because there are many avenues where it seems to me that we need some protection for society that I'm not sure could be provided otherwise. For example, Larkin, Al was talking about a physician who was arrested or whatever for treating people for cancer with baking soda, and Al wasn't offering any opinion about whether that was valid or medically sound or whatever. But let's take that issue. Should the government be involved in deciding who can practice medicine, for example, or other things where if a person gets involved in that field and they're not knowledgeable, they could do a lot of harm to people?
Right. And again, I'd put that in the form of a question about the nature of the thing called government. I'd say, let's say there's somebody who's out there selling sugar for $100 an ounce, saying that in 5 minutes it'll cure any disease in the world. You know, something outrageously, ridiculously untrue, and he knows it, and it's obvious fraud. He's taking advantage of people. My question is, this thing called government, does it have any right to intervene or do something to stop him that I don't have myself, or that you don't have yourself? In other words, I wouldn't mind doing something to try to stop him, or at least tell his customers he's totally lying to you and trying to rip you off. The question is, does this government thing have some right to do something we don't, like, say, a right I obviously don't have, and I'm pretty sure you'd agree you don't have it, is the right to say, hey, anybody out there selling anything that you claim is medical, you have to come to me first and get my permission before you're allowed to sell it. I would never in a million years even claim the knowledge to begin to make such decisions, much less the right to forcibly impose them on everybody. So my question is, does this government thing have the right to do to people something I don't, whether it's the charlatan that I just described, or somebody who comes up with some therapy that I don't know whether it works or not? Or does this government thing have rights that I don't? Can it do stuff that I have no right to do?
Well, that's a good question. Don't we as a society, when we form government, don't we, through our representatives and whatnot, don't we delegate certain rights or powers to it to do things that we as individuals don't do?
Don't do or can't do, because we can't delegate to them a right we don't have. We can say, hey, Fred, we're all allowed to mow our own lawns, but we'd like to delegate to you the job of mowing all our lawns, and we'll pay you for it. That's delegating a right we have. What we don't have the right to do is say, hey, Joe, I really don't like my neighbor, but I don't have the right to kill him. But we're going to delegate to you the right to go kill him. So go kill him, please. That's why the question is, does government have rights that we don't? Because where the heck would it get them? I can't give, if I don't have the right to say anybody selling anything that they claim to be medical needs my permission first, if I don't have that right, which I certainly don't, I couldn't possibly delegate that right to you or to anyone else. And you don't have that right and I don't have that right. It doesn't matter how many of us who don't have that right get together. We can't delegate to some other party a right that none of us have, whether it's the right to steal or the right to murder or the right to say nobody can sell anything unless we say it's okay, which is basically what the FDA does. And so the question, again, is, does this government thing have any right to interfere in any situation where I don't? It might have the ability, but the question is, does it have the right to?
Right. I understand. That's what I was getting at. Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I guess I was always taught in school and everything that, you know, we have the freest government in the world, or we have the freest country in the world, because we have limited government protecting us. I didn't hear about any of these ideas in school, so I didn't think about them beforehand.
you and everybody else. Me and everybody else.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, well, you raise some good points. It's just, I think for me, and maybe there are a number of people that feel this way, I don't know, Larkin, if they'd call in and tell us, we'd find out, that they can't refute your logic, but they have this uneasy feeling that if we don't retain some level of government, we'll have a total breakdown in society and everybody will be worse off than they are under the present kinds of problems that we have.
Right. And a thing I like to do when people predict mayhem and doom and gloom without government is say, okay, you personally are scared of what people out there might do. So am I. So is everybody with a brain. Because there are nasty people out there in this country and other countries all over the place who would rob us or kill us or whatever. So we're worried about what they might do. Do you think it's okay for you, based on that worry of what they might do to you, to start doing evil stuff? Stuff that you would otherwise deem evil. Like, I'm not sure I can afford to educate my kids or send them to school, so I'm going to rob you to pay for it.
I would agree emphatically with you. I don't have the right to do something, to use force to make somebody else provide a service to me, even if I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to have that service if it's not provided by government. I agree with you on that.
Right. And that, you know, if that applies to protection, I forget how many, it was years and years ago, wrote a thing called The God Called Government. Back then, I thought I was still a limited government guy. But when I go back and read it, I have to come to the conclusion that by that time, the only thing I was hanging on to was the word government. Because every aspect that actually makes it a government, I said, well, that's not okay, and that's not justified, and that's not legitimate. So I took out all its guts and called what was left government. And it took me ages to come to the realization that isn't government. It's like saying, well, we need carjackers, but all they should do is protect us from people who would steal our cars. Well, that's okay if people do that, but why would you call them carjackers? They're not carjackers anymore. And if you take away the superhuman rights of a protection organization and say, well, it's not allowed to rob people, it doesn't have the right to do anything that I don't have the right to, you know, I can delegate it the rights that I have, I can't delegate rights I don't, it doesn't have the right to have a forced monopoly, it doesn't have the right to say, hey, everyone, you're going to pay for this whether you like it or not. When you take away all of those ingredients of unjust violence, what's left isn't government anymore. It's called freedom.
But okay, let's bring Al. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, let's bring Al back on and see what his thoughts are on that. And then in the meantime, while my producer's bringing him back up, what is this thing about government that we have, Larkin, that we can't let go of it? Even if only in name, even if we do what you did and we say, well, it shouldn't do this and it shouldn't do that, and we strip it down, why is it so hard for us to let go of the concept of government?
Sorry. Right. It's completely a result of indoctrination. And I mean that in the complete literal sense of the term. The belief in government is not one that we reach through reason and logic. And I have a fun analogy to illustrate that.
Okay, we'll take that up when we get back, and we'll let Al chime in here. We'll be back here in a few minutes, folks. Stay with us. You're on Liberty News Radio. And And welcome back to the Peter Mac Show, folks. And Larkin Rhodes is on the line with me, and we are now about to discuss what his thoughts are on government, how we came, how we all got to this position that we just can't do without government. And if Al's there and he wants to join back in, then bring Al back up, if you would, please.
Oh, hi, fellas. I didn't mean to hog the phone lines there, Peter, but I wanted to mention to Larkin, I'm very interested in getting a black T-shirt with the Iron Web logo on it.
Oh, yeah, we're working on it.
Oh, good, good.
Yep, we'll have lots of fun stuff like that.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to make mention, one of the things that we talked about the other day on our show was the idea of, for example, Peter, I understand what you're saying about government. Let's take a basic thing like a dispute between Larkin and I. Okay? Mm-hmm. Larkin and I have a dispute. I went to his house, and I asked to borrow a shovel. I didn't rent it, because under common law, if I rented it, he would be responsible for returning it in good order. But if I borrowed that shovel, and I broke it while I was using it, and I brought it back to Larkin, I said, hey, Larkin, here's your shovel. I'm sorry, it's broke. Larkin would say, Al, you owe me a shovel. You know, you broke right. my shovel, doggone it. And I said, well, no, and we had words, and finally I just said, that's it, I'm leaving. Well, let's say there was no government. What Larkin could do is he could go to, hey, Peter, you're a fine, upstanding member of this community. People respect what you say. And I'd like to inform you of what Al did to me. He damaged me. He borrowed the shovel, he broke it, and when he brought it back, it was broke. And I told him that I felt that he owed me a shovel. And Peter, we're going to rely on you for your fine, upstanding judgment. And basically, let's say I become belligerent. Okay, so Larkin files suit. He says, Peter, I'm appointing you the judge in this case. And whoever wins or whoever loses is going to pay you a $50 fee for being a judge in this case. And, of course, as it goes back and forth, I get a thing in the mail saying, you've been summoned, and I say, I rip it up and I throw it away. I don't even show up. Well, now Larkin wins by default in his court, and you being the judge would render a judgment. And so Larkin could actually at that point put in the newspaper, Al is a cheat, and he doesn't make good on his debt. So everybody in the community now knows that Al is a bad guy. Don't do business with Al. You see how that would kind of work, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, it would damage my reputation, but it wouldn't necessarily get him his shovel back, though, right?
That's true. However, in that community, my name is Mud, and the other thing that Larkin could do, because let's say you did have a sheriff. Oh, I heard music.
I did, too. I don't know where it's coming
okay.
from.
Okay. Well, invaded by an orchestra for no apparent reason.
Let's say I ran off. I ran away because I feared that the community was going to come after me. If I left something, a house, a car, whatever, Larkin could make a claim against that item. Now, only for the amount of the shovel, though. See, I would still be entitled to whatever proceeds came from selling my 1972 Ford Pinto. to raise the money to give Larkin enough money for the shovel. And so Larkin, here's $20 for the shovel, and Peter, here's $50 out of the proceeds because I lost the case. Now, the rest of the money should come back to me, but that would be an example of how things could be handled without having a man in a black robe saying that he is, that he's some revered god. Some god to be revered. Mm-hmm. And I want to mention again that Iron Web, your book, Larkin, knocked my socks off. it really
socks?
Gave me hope for the future. And I do appreciate that.
Well, thanks for saying so.
Good. Good.
All right, well, new socks. Are you going to sue me for new socks?
socks versus the shovel. Well, let's get into how this comes about, Larkin. You said that, I think you said just before the break that it's a form of indoctrination in the full sense of the word. Maybe you could explain to us how it how it comes to be. And were you and I susceptible to that before we came to our present positions?
Yeah, yeah, and I think everybody is, because when you're told over and over again when you're young that something's true, and I like to use the example of Santa Claus, something that doesn't make any sense. Like, there's 8 zillion obvious laws of physics that it goes against that even a five-year-old goes, well, a flying sleigh, and this big fat guy fits down a chimney, and he has this bag that's, you know, 6 feet tall, and it holds, what, 5 billion presents? You know, they already have enough evidence to go, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. But they hear it all over the place, so they assume it's true. Well, government is that sort of belief. It's a belief taken on faith. It is not the result of rationally thinking things out. And there's an analogy, a sort of a mental exercise I like to do on people that demonstrate that they don't think we need government because they thought it out and it seems to make sense. They think they need government because they were told, we need government, we need government, we need government. And then they try to retroactively justify it when I say, no, we don't. And the analogy goes like this. There's 50, 100, 200 people, whatever, on a plane, and it crashes on a desert island. And luckily the pilot's good enough that the people live, but the plane's doomed. So you have all these people in this place, they don't know what anything is, they have no houses, they have, you know, they don't know what food they can eat, what the fruits are. Everything is weird to them. So you start, you're basically starting a little tiny society from scratch. Now, instantly all those people would sort of be stuck in the position of having to act like adult human beings, where they go, all right, this is a really bad situation. What can we do about it? And somebody might say, well, I was a Boy Scout. I know how to start a campfire. So if we can find something to cook, I can start a fire and we can cook it. Good. And somebody else can say, well, I know how to build, like, lean-tos and stuff because it's going to be night soon and I'd rather not be sleeping out in the open. And so people can suggest things they can do. And a lot of people might say, well, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I've never even been camping. But Fred over here, he seems to have some idea what's going on. So I'll help him with what he's doing. You know, he's building lean-tos. I don't know how to do it, but I'll just do what he tells me to. And so people cooperate in a bunch of different ways, and they, you know, there's division of labor just naturally occurring. People do what they know how to do. And the guy who knows how to build lean-tos might say, you know, I'm building everybody's lean-to because nobody else knows how to do it without it falling over. It would kind of be nice if other people could get me some food because I'm spending all my time doing this. And people say, okay, well, we'll get you some food and to pay you for building lean-to. You know, you have this naturally occurring, mutually voluntary human interaction. Now, imagine how weird it'd be, and people are so indoctrinated, this might actually happen, but imagine how weird it'd be. Plane crashes, everybody goes, oh, no, what are we doing here? Some guy stands up and says, I have the right to rule all of you. I will tell you what to do, and I will hurt you if you disobey me. You have to give me a bunch of money right now. I'm not going to produce anything. I'm just going to boss you around, and I have the moral right to boss you around and the moral right to hurt you if you disobey. If anybody did that, the rest of them would say, what on earth is wrong with you? First of all, right, how could you even imagine that to be true, that you have the right to rule us just because a plane crashed here? Second, why do you think that would help the situation? Like, you bossing people around, you don't even know what you're doing. You don't know how to build a lean-to. You don't know what to cook. You don't know what to eat. Just shut up. And the people would immediately recognize that the guy's a psycho. They would ignore him. They wouldn't even have to overthrow him because nobody would enforce his stupid will. That is what government is, and we're trained to think that's what we need. But in the island scenario, obviously, nobody would want that.
Right. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back to talk more about that. We've got a half hour left. If you want to chime in here, the phone number, toll-free, 866-986-6397. Back, folks. Larkin Rose is on the line with us tonight, and we are discussing government and more recently the indoctrination that we all undergo somehow that leads us to believe in government as this authority that gets to do things that none of the rest of us gets to do. I liked your analogy about the people who find themselves on the island. That's a good one, Larkin.
Right.
So,
and the last part of that, if I can just barge in.
Oh, right. Sure.
Is that in that scenario, if the guy stands up and says, I have the right to boss you around and take your stuff and tell you what to do and hurt you if you disobey me, how many of the people, all the people watching would say, you're out of your mind, go away, we're trying to feed ourselves and stay alive, and you're just an idiot and getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
But how many people would look and say, wow, that's what we really need, because otherwise we're all going to kill each other. Like, right. When you take it down to a level of just a few hundred people, it becomes patently obvious how utterly insane it is to think that one nasty, violent bully is what we need to protect us from each other. Like, if there's 200 people on the plane, there's a pretty good chance there's some people there who aren't entirely pure of heart, and they might try to steal your food, and they might try to do nasty things. So there's enough people you might think, I don't trust everybody here. I don't know everybody here. I don't know what they're capable of. So I'm going to make a spear. And I know a few other people, and we're going to sort of get together and, watch each other's back, and just because we don't know what other people are capable of. That makes perfect sense. That's anarchist defense. What would be utterly loony is to say, I'm not sure I trust these people. Let's rob all of them. And that's exactly what government is. I don't know if we should trust them. Let's steal all their stuff and boss them around and forcibly control them, just in case. And in the island scenario, no one would be dumb enough to do that. Nobody would say, well, we have to have that or there'd be chaos. They'd say, that's stupid. We protect each other. We figure out how to trade, and we each do what we know how to do. Those of us who can't do anything but, sort of help somebody who knows what he's doing, well, they'll do that, and we'll trade, and so that, one guy isn't doing all the work while the rest of us sit around. We naturally, a system of trade evolves, but nobody's going to say there's going to be chaos unless a subgroup of us bosses everyone else around. It's just so patently idiotic an idea in that setting, but when you make the numbers bigger, suddenly almost everybody argues that that really is the case. That human beings cannot coexist unless there's a big gang of violent bullies controlling us all. And that's why
go ahead.
This is not, government is not a belief we reached from reason and logic. It was indoctrinated into us. It doesn't make any sense. And the reason so many people defend it, the reason I defended it for years and years, is because I heard it over and over and over and over again. I assumed it must be true. And it's not. It's total bunk.
Let's see what Tom has to say. Go ahead and bring up Tom, if you would.
Hello, Larkin?
Hey.
Hey, this is Tom from Georgia.
Howdy.
I like what you got to say. I love your book. In fact, I got one of the local college professors to use it in his class.
Whoa.
And that's what he uses as a guideline. He teaches criminology at our local college here.
Which book of his are you referring to, Tom?
How to Be a Successful Tyrant.
Okay.
And also The Iron Web. One of the questions I had, though, Larkin, is and I'm in agreement with you, the less government, the better. Basically, I don't see where you really need it, except in the case that you were talking about earlier about, if you injured somebody, well, you could still pick out someone to act as an advisor. But my biggest concern is our courts. And I'm talking from the lowest level all the way up. I was there at your trial, and you were basically denied a defense. So what do you do about the court system?
Well, it comes down to the question of what people perceive when they look at something. Right now, when they look at government, they perceive authority, a thing that has the right to rule them. And when a court makes an idiotic ruling, people say, well, it's the law. Now, in a society where we don't deify judges as if they're, you know, gods and their decrees are automatically true. If somebody says, I judge that Fred tripped on your lawn and twisted his ankle, so you owe him $1 trillion, everybody would say, wow, you're an idiot. We're never asking for your opinion again. But when some judge says, yeah, you poured hot coffee on yourself, you got a few million bucks, people go, oh, it's the law. So it's all in the perception of the public. If they perceive a court as an authority instead of just as a human being acting as an arbiter or, you know, an investigator trying to determine the facts of what actually happened, you know, if they view all these institutions as consisting of just people, just mere mortals, no authority, no magic extra rights, then they don't do all the weird things that we do with government, and they don't put up with all the oppression that they put up with from government because they think, well, my neighbor doesn't have the right to rob me, but the government has the right to tax me because it's different. It's not people. It's this magical thing. So the entire problem and the entire solution is in the perception of the people. If they, like we were discussing before, an arbiter, if they go to a person, they realize he's just a person. He's not a superhuman being. He's not a god. He's just a guy, and we trust his judgment. If he says something idiotic, people don't say, oh, well, now it's case law. We all have to be idiotic. They say, wow, you're stupid, and we don't respect you anymore. Goodbye. And so it's so much about how people perceive, whether it's a court or a protector or anything else, how people perceive that thing. Do they believe that its commands are inherently righteous and we have a moral obligation to obey? That's authority. Or do they just think, well, it's a guy and we think he's pretty smart, so let's listen to what he has to say and we'll, you know, put up with his, you know, if we both went to him and agreed to go along with his decision, we'll put up with it unless it's idiotic. Like, hey, you broke my shovel. All right, kill him. People would say, no, you don't kill him. You're an idiot. Okay, you're fired. Now we need a person who isn't an idiot. But when government does something that stupid, they go, oh, no, we have to get different case law or we have to elect somebody else because they're so stuck in the authority mindset that they really think that they have an obligation to obey whatever authority says. I know it was sort of a long-winded answer, but I hope that was kind of along the lines of what you were looking for.
And it was through your book where it first dawned on me that authority is nothing more than an illusion. One other quick question. I'm a member of the Iron Web, and when I go onto your site, I don't know how to get onto the chat room. Can you tell me how to do it? I'm online right now. You've got 144 guests and one member being me, but how do I go to the chat?
Well, let me tell you, the first thing you have to do, Tom, is you have to submit your Social Security number and sign up for government benefits, and then we'll let you into the chat room for anarchy discussion.
And yeah, your right. Blood type and your firstborn child. Yeah. And your No, yeah. Hey, if you're on the website, the top of the front page, this is only there if you're signed in as a member, is Iron Web Members, and it has a drop-down menu, and one of the things is chat room.
Oh, I see. Okay, there it is. All right, thank you very much. I've been looking for 2 days and couldn't find it.
Yeah, it took me a minute to find it, and it's my website, so
yeah.
Don't blame you.
Well, thank you very much, and keep up the great work.
Yep. Thank you, Tom. Well, he does make a good point in bringing that up, and you too, Larkin. We do have this. It's a combination, is it not, of a belief in authority and a reverence for certain decisions that we wouldn't allow. Have you heard of this? There's this case where this 22-year-old American woman has been convicted of murder in Italy. You aware about this case?
I don't think so.
Okay, this 22-year-old woman's been convicted of murder in Italy, and she's been sentenced to like 26 years in prison. And a lot of people commenting on it saying it wasn't really a fair trial. They're not saying she was innocent. They don't know enough about the facts. And some of them even chime in and say, well, they can see why the jury reached its conclusion, but the prosecution was under investigation, all that. What I find interesting about this case is a lot of people are very suspicious about the conduct of the trial that led to her conviction. But I think it's because it was in Italy. And you and I know that there are just as many bogus kinds of convictions in the U.S. I don't know if they are about murder, because I don't know how many people are convicted of murder unjustly.
Oh, they
or...
are. They are okay. On murder, too.
Okay, but, I mean, I have more firsthand knowledge, obviously, of the tax issue. And my, you know, my concern is, or my, I guess my point is, I think they should be equally suspicious of trials that take place in the United States, but they have this reverence for our court system that we don't have for other countries. So, well, you can't respond because we're at break, so there, you can respond later. We'll be back in a minute, folks. Stay with us. Okay, welcome back, folks, for the last quarter of an hour here. Lark and I sort of put a question to you right there at the break. That is, you know, we it's easy for Americans, I think, to find fault with what goes on in other countries in their trial systems, and I think in this particular case, legitimately so. But that we seem to be, to some degree, blind about what goes on in our own justice system.
Right.
Is that part of the indoctrination?
There's actually a thing in the Iron Web about that. I won't say what the context is, but describing how both in other countries and in other times, people don't mind saying, you know, the Nazis, their laws were bogus. It was okay to disobey them. It was okay to shoot at them. You know, slavery, that was bogus. It was here, but it was a while ago. But that's people pointing at other people's slave masters and saying, he's a bad guy, you're allowed to disobey him. But when it comes to their own slave master, here and now, they feel a moral obligation to obey. So they're much more inclined to obey their own authority while pointing a finger and saying, ha ha ha, look at your dumb government over there, look how corrupt it is. But ours is great. And ignore the fact that, no, it's actually exactly the same. You know, there are a few minor surface differences, but that's it. But it so much comes down to the perception of authority of, if you think someone has the right to rule you, he's going to stomp on you all day. If you think he's just a human being, then you're not going to let him get away with that. We let them get away with stomping on us. I say we're actually exceptions. The American people let the tyrants stomp on them because they think they have the right to do so. And since we're in the last segment, I'll throw out this thing. If anybody wants to take something I say out of context, this is the best chance you're going to have. Ready? There shouldn't be laws against murder. All right, everybody, quote-unquote, Larkin Rose, there shouldn't be laws against murder. Here's why. When you call something a law, you act as if the origin of the command is what mattered. In other words, politicians sat down and wrote, you're not allowed to murder, and that's why it's bad. There should be threats against murder. Imagine some town that puts up a big thing in the middle of the town that says, if you kill one of us, we kill you. We're not legislating it. We're not saying we are making this justified. We're just saying, here's what we believe we have the right to do if you do this to one of us. We're not claiming authority. We're not saying we're government. We don't call it law. It's a threat. Or a warning, that if you do this nasty thing to one of us, and we catch you, here's what we're going to do to you. The problem with making it into a law is as soon as you have somebody who's the lawmaker, the legislator, he becomes the thing that people perceive as the morality, the justification. He enacted it into law, thou shalt not murder. And the next day, he enacted into law, you have to give me half your paycheck. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you accept the notion that what that guy says is law, he's your master. Mere mortals can make perfectly good, perfectly justifiable threats that serve every legitimate purpose of quote-unquote law. They do the deterrent, they do the notice to people, like if we catch you stealing something, we're going to make you do forced labor until you pay for it twice or something. You know, whatever the threat is, but it's not saying we are altering morality. It's just saying, here's what we think we have the right to do, and here's what we're going to do to you just as people. not as government, not as authority, not as some magical religious entity that has superhuman rights, just as people. Here's what we think. Here's what we're going to do to you. It's a warning. Mm-hmm. And so even what would otherwise be legitimate laws shouldn't be laws, because as soon as you call them law, the lawmaker becomes your master. And the next day, you can bet his quote-unquote law will be, I want half your income, or a tenth, or, you know, we'll start low so you don't shoot me, and then we'll ratchet mm-hmm. it up. But if people perceive other people as just people and treat them that way, it would just go a huge way towards having actual peace and justice and peaceful coexistence, instead of saying what we need is a big master to do the right thing. Because as soon as you put someone on the pedestal, first thing he's going to do is rob you, second thing he's going to do is stomp on you. Then you're going to say, darn it, this isn't what we wanted him for. So that's my fun thing out of context.
Okay. Well, be sure to try to take it out of context. I don't, that's sort of like trying to forget something. But anyway, in my role as, pre-whatever year is appropriate, Larkin Rose, arguing for limited government, I was trying to enact what my experience has been in talking to many people about this issue and sort of synthesizing that into one voice that has concerns about
right.
what will happen if government goes away. And I wonder how much of that is driven by the ability to say, okay, I see your point, Larkin, as I said a couple times, but I still conveyed some uneasiness with the situation. So we have, you know, the age-old conflict between reason and emotion, if you will, or the head and the heart, perhaps from indoctrination, probably so, but I don't know for sure. But a person saying, I see that that makes sense, but it still doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And that's something that we in this movement are going to have to deal with, because we are not just dealing with, you know, Spock from Star Trek, that if you present a logical argument, he'll go, oh, well, of course, I changed my mind now. I didn't see it before, but you presented an argument. Unfortunately, people do not change their minds, you know, to truth merely for having been shown the logical necessity of truth.
Right.
And so we have a difficult job, as you well know, in front of us, and that is to present the logical arguments like you've been doing, but also to be aware of the difficulty, illogical as it may be, because you and I have gone through this process, and somehow help people along. And I don't know what the answer is to that, but
yeah,
I think that's
really
a necessity.
Yeah, it really is like deprogramming someone out of a cult. In fact, it isn't just like that. It is that. It's trying to deprogram
yeah.
someone out of the cult of statism. Another analogy I use, I may run out of time, but, you know, if you go to some island where they believe the volcano is a god and they have to throw a maiden into it every week or they'll get bad weather, if they're all mm-hmm. taught that from the time they're young, you know, as soon as they know how to talk, they're taught, yeah, we have to do this. It makes the weather work. If you come in and say, there's a leak in the crust, that's magma coming out of the, it has nothing to do with a god. It's a natural
right.
occurrence. Throwing people into it doesn't help. In fact, the people you throw into it, it really doesn't help them. But if they've been taught all their lives that this is how things are, it will be really uncomfortable for them to hear just factual, scientific, logical explanation of, you're just murdering people for nothing. And they're going to say, but there would be chaos if we didn't. You know, we'd have no rain for 100 years, because that's what we've all been told since we were little tiny babies. We all know that we have to throw a maiden into the volcano every week or there would be chaos, because we were all told it. We've never seen it happen because we've never given it a chance to happen, because we've always thrown maidens into the volcano every week. And so it really is that sort of indoctrination that we're up against, that they were told it over and over again way before their rational mind could process it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really is a deprogramming. And I say they, it was true of me, too. I had to go through the deprogramming. Mm-hmm. You did. Everybody I know did.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were all raised to believe you have to throw the maiden into the volcano. We were all raised to believe you have to have authority to have civilization. And just like the throwing people into a volcano, not only doesn't it help, but it's heinously evil. You're killing people. Stop doing that.
Right.
But people still say, well, we have to. It's necessary. We don't really like it. We don't really like the IRS. We don't really like war. We don't really like all these things. But it's necessary, because otherwise there would be chaos. And the only reason they think that is because they were told it day in and day out ever since they understood the language. And trying to get that out of their brains and out of my brain and out of your brain is a slow, uncomfortable process, because it's not pleasant to think, you mean everything I've believed my whole life was based on a lie? People don't want to admit that. But it's completely true when it comes to government.
And maybe the hardest people to deal with for us in the camp that you and I are in now is the people that are our friends who are still conservatives or limited government advocates, because we see these people on a day-to-day basis. And occasionally our conversations drift into that area. And it's kind of like walking on eggshells sometimes. You cannot be too proactive in pushing your argument, because you know these people will run away or it will cut off talk.
Right. When they
just
say,
like I'm being
hey,
cut
are
off
you going
now.
To the weekly maiden sacrifice? What do you say?
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks again, Larkin, for being on. And folks, have a Merry Christmas. And we'll be back here for one more show next week, so we'll hope you'll tune in for that last one. And if you have any suggestions on who I should have for a guest, send me an email at peter@petermacshow.com.